What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Huge bomb blasts rock northern China. At least 44 people were killed and hundreds more injured by a series of enormous explosions at a hazardous materials warehouse in the northeastern Chinese port city of Tianjin late Wednesday. At least 400 people were injured. Pictures and videos show gigantic plumes of fire and a mushroom cloud that dwarfed nearby high-rise buildings, sending a massive shockwave that rattled residents several kilometers from the blast site. There are no indications about what caused the explosion. Iraqi officials say a powerful truck bomb tore through a Shiite neighborhood of Baghdad, killing at least 33 people and wounding dozens more. The truck bomb was detonated just after dawn in a crowded market in Sadr City. There's been no claim of responsibility. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon took action in response to sexual abuse allegations against UN peacekeepers in the Central African Republic. He asked for and accepted the resignation of his top envoy there, a longtime Senegalese diplomat and military officer.
I want victims to know that we will strive to uphold our institutional responsibility to safeguard their security and dignity.
Mr. Ban said UN leaders must report allegations immediately, investigate thoroughly, and act decisively. Peace talks between Libya's warring factions ended Wednesday in Geneva without resolution. Libya is split between two governments, supported by armed troops fighting each other. The internationally recognized government is based in the eastern city of Tobruk, while an Islamist-backed government rules from the capital of Tripoli. This is VOA News. China is allowing the value of its yuan currency to weaken against the dollar for a third consecutive day. A weaker currency could boost China's economic growth by making Chinese-made exports less expensive for foreign buyers. A tense situation is underway at the headquarters of Myanmar's ruling Union Solidarity and Development Party, where security forces are not allowing those attending a party meeting to leave. Sources tell VOA a conflict developed between President Thein Sein and party leader and parliament speaker Shui Man. The speaker's assistant told VOA the situation is very complicated and it should be settled this morning. Shui Man's status and whereabouts are not known at this time. Syrian activists say that rebel shelling and government airstrikes near Damascus killed at least 36 people. The violence Wednesday erupted and just hours before Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif arrived in the Syrian capital for talks with President Bashar al-Assad about Tehran's new plan to end Syria's civil war that it wants to offer to the United Nations. More than 60 people have died and hundreds are hospitalized by a heat wave gripping the Middle East. VOA's Heather Murdoch has details.
This summer's heat has killed many people across the Middle East, with temperatures that have been in the 40s and sometimes even in the 50s for weeks. The elderly, detainees, and mental patients have been among the victims in Egypt. Senior researcher Ziad Akal of the Cairo-based Al-Ahram Center for Political and Strategic Studies says the heat is further dividing society.
It is highlighting the huge gap that exists between classes in the region in general, and specifically in countries that aren't as rich as the Gulf countries.
In Egypt, he says, rich people have either taken to the beaches or remain inside with air conditioners. And the poor try to cool off in places like public fountains, to the dismay of the rich. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Cairo.
A Nigerian national who served as a propagandist and recruiter for Al-Qaeda's Yemeni affiliate was sentenced to 22 years in prison by a U.S. federal court on Wednesday. 35-year-old Lawal Babafemi pleaded guilty last year to providing material support to a designated foreign terrorist organization, Al-Qaeda, in the Arabian Peninsula. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter announced Wednesday that he has cancer. It was discovered during liver surgery earlier in the month. Mr. Carter, who was 90, did not specify what type of cancer he has, but did say that it is spread. And U.S. Marines will hoist the American flag outside the U.S. Embassy in Havana Friday. It'll mark the ceremonial reopening of the diplomatic facility after the U.S. and Cuba agreed to restore ties severed over 50 years ago. I am Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bhatti in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says enough is enough on UN peacekeepers and sexual abuse.
I want to be clear that this problem goes far beyond one mission or one conflict or one person. Sexual exploitation and abuse is a global scourge.
At the South Sudan peace talks in Ethiopia, parties agree to disagree on some key issues. Human Rights Watch says the conflict between the Pygmies and another tribe in the DRC is sparked by discrimination. And Nigerian President Buhari's government is vowing to prosecute corrupt former officials.
The president has set himself an important task, which is to fight corruption. And for him, the second point was to block all leakages that are used to steal Nigerian assets, particularly crude oil.
Garba Shehu is spokesman for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. The United States expresses no concern over the apparent lack of progress in Zimbabwe government's investigation of the disappearance of activist Itai Zamora. And new travel rules are said to be hurting South Africa's tourism industry. Those stories plus Marco Oman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN Secretary General has taken strong action in response to the latest sexual abuse allegations against UN peacekeepers in the Central African Republic. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
UN Chief Ban Ki-moon said he had asked for and accepted the resignation of his top envoy in the CAR, Lieutenant General Babacar Gaye. He said although the longtime Senegalese diplomat and military officer had served tirelessly at the head of the UN mission, he wants to send a strong message.
I want to be clear that this problem goes far beyond one mission or one conflict or one person. Sexual exploitation and abuse is a global scourge and systemic challenge that demands a systemic response.
The UN deployed its mission, known by its acronym MINUSCA, a year ago. Since then, there have been several allegations of sexual abuse of children, first by international forces that preceded the mission and later by UN peacekeepers. Amnesty International brought the latest allegations to light on Tuesday, saying a 12-year-old girl was raped by a peacekeeper during an operation last week in the capital, Bangui. UN police from Rwanda and Cameroon were operating in the area where the attack allegedly took place. Mr. Bond said he has requested the Security Council convene a special session on Thursday to discuss the subject, and he will also hold a video conference with his envoys, force commanders, and police commissioners in all peacekeeping missions to underscore their responsibility. He said UN leaders must report allegations immediately, investigate thoroughly, and act decisively. Mr. Bond said failure to do so would have clear consequences. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari promises to soon start prosecuting former public officials who stole public funds and stashed them in overseas accounts. He made a statement after meeting with members of the peace committee led by former military leader General Abdusalami Abubakar at the presidential villa in the capital, Abuja. According to one member, the committee advised Mr. Buhari to ensure that the legal process is thoroughly followed in the much-anticipated trial. Presidential spokesman Garba Shehu tells reporter Peter Clotty the prosecution of those accused of financial malfeasance forms part of Buhari's promise to weed out graft.
The president has set himself an important task, which is to fight corruption. And for him, the second point was to block all leakages that are used to steal Nigerian assets, particularly crude oil, which is being transported using fake papers to foreign countries, sold and transferred, and the proceeds placed on privately held accounts, not the accounts of the Nigerian government. Following the support he has received from the EU, from the United States, and now this support is growing, even the countries of Asia are coming to the aid of Nigeria. They are helping Nigeria to track and trace the stolen crude oil and the proceeds as well. Tankers hopefully are being impounded and bank accounts are being blocked. So the president has been very painstaking in this work that he's doing. He wants to establish incontrovertible evidence.
there are concerns, and some Nigerians have said that the president has been moving too slow, and they want him to expedite action on these corrupt practices. So the question becomes, how soon will this prosecution begin?
Well, the president's answer for those critics is a very simple one. This is his second coming as head of the Nigerian state. When he came in as a military president, what they did was very simple. Whoever was suspected of having stolen Nigerian assets, what they did was just they locked up that person and they were looking for evidence. Now, that was military government and democratic. Under the constitution of Nigeria, under a civilian democratic system of government which we operate, you cannot lock up people without the evidence. So there's a process that is prescribed by the law itself, and the Nigerians have to be patient. Otherwise, the rights of Nigerians will be compromised, and he doesn't want to do that.
I heard President Buhari has issued an executive order calling on all civil servants to answer queries by the auditors within 24 hours. What is the rationale behind it, and how is the president in turn carrying this out?
Well, this is in the extant rules of the Nigerian public side. Impunity has grown so big in Nigeria that audit queries that should be answered within 24 hours, it takes weeks, months, and years to be responded to. And what he simply says is that, no, that is wrong. It's not acceptable. And that he will not thrive under his administration. Well, the director that within 30 days, all of the backlog, all unanswered audit queries should not be answered within 30 days. And going forward now, all queries that are issued will be answered within 48 hours, within 24 hours. It's there in the rules. It's simply that people are not observing the rules.
Galba Shehu, a spokesman for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. At the South Sudan, peace talks going on in Ethiopia. Negotiators for both President Salva Kiir's government and the armed opposition group led by former Vice President Riek Machar emerged yesterday from days of closed-door meetings with very little progress to report. South Sudan government spokesman Michael McQuay said the two sides agreed to disagree on some key outstanding issues.
We have disagreed on the structure of the government. We have disagreed on the powers and competencies of the president and the vice president, or the first vice president, as the rebels call it. We have also disagreed on the power sharing in terms of percentages, whether at the national level or at the state level. We have disagreed on security issues, on the demilitarization of Juba and other places.
The chief negotiator for the rebels, Taban Deng Gai, also said the two sides were still far apart on the issues separating them.
In the area of governance, we are still differing from agreeing on when do we implement federalism. The government is proposing that we implement federalism during the process of making the permanent constitution for the people of South Sudan. We are saying the issue of federalism is overdue.
Deng said while the rebels made concessions during last March negotiations, the South Sudan government delegation brought no suggestions to the current talks.
The government came on with one president, two vice presidents, with equal status. We also accepted this on condition that the powers of the president and first vice president should be spelled out very clearly. This is an area of disagreement up to now because the government came again with their original proposal. They are calling for a president and two vice presidents with equal status, which has never happened in any government structures.
The regional group IGAD, which is coordinating the talks, has given both sides an August 17 deadline to reach an agreement. South Sudan government spokesman McQuay says whether the two sides sign a deal on Monday will depend on the willingness of the rebels to negotiate in good faith.
There are outstanding issues which are disagreed, even though there are few, but they are the most important. So as to whether we'll sign on the 17th or not, it's another issue. But what I'm saying is that all these disagreed issues are the most important, and without us agreeing on them, there is no peace.
On the other hand, the rebels say it is the South Sudan government that must soften its position. This report was compiled by reporter John Tanza of U.S. South Sudan in Focus program, who is covering the talks in Addis Ababa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 13th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. A group of international envoys has called on the government of Burundi to show restraint and resume political dialogue in an effort to end political, humanitarian and economic crisis stemming from President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek and win a third term in office. The diplomats from the United Nations, African Union, European Union, Belgium and the United States call for an end to violence, respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms, and the resumption of an inclusive political dialogue. President Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term in office triggered a failed coup in June and sparked criticism from those who say he undermined the constitution and the Arusha Accord, which effectively ended the country's 13-year civil war. The July 21st vote, which saw Nkurunziza re-elected, were widely viewed as flawed. A conflict between the Pygmy and Luba communities in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo appears to have been sparked by discrimination, according to Human Rights Watch. Nick Long has more from Goma in eastern Congo.
The United Nations reports hundreds of civilians have been killed in northern territories of the Democratic Republic of Congo's Katanga province since armed groups from the ethnic Batwa, or Pygmy, and Luba communities started launching large-scale attacks on each other's villages 2 years ago. Dozens of villages have been burned to the ground and tens of thousands of people displaced. Human Rights Watch recently interviewed survivors of one of the worst attacks when Luba fighters killed at least 30 Pygmies with machetes, arrows and axes in April at Nyunzu. The organisation has also spoken to Luba survivors of Pygmy attacks. In its report on the conflict released Tuesday, Human Rights Watch calls for DRC authorities with UN support to improve protection, investigate and prosecute those responsible for atrocities and address the communal tensions and discrimination, which it says appear to have sparked the fighting. The report says tensions between the two communities erupted in mid-2013 after Batwa demanded respect for their basic rights, including access to land and an end to alleged forced labour or a form of slavery. Spokesman for the UN mission in Congo, MONUSCO, Felix Bass, discussed the situation Wednesday.
Le conflit entre les Luba et les Balubakat et les Pygmées n'est pas un conflit.
The conflict between the Luba and the Pygmies is not recent, it is centuries old, Bass tells reporters. He says the two communities' coexistence has been troubled because of land disputes and claims to certain rights, and they have formed armed groups that clash repeatedly. The Human Rights Watch report says the government has primary responsibility for security in the area, but alleges MONUSCO has had too few troops based at Nyunzu. Bass rejected suggestions the mission has paid insufficient attention to this remote area.
Monsieur Martin Kobler s'était personnellement rendu à Nyunzu.
He says MONUSCO Chief Martin Kobler personally visited Nyunzu to investigate the social situation there, which he says is deteriorating by the day.
À plusieurs reprises, la MONUSCO a déployé des troupes à Nyunzu, des forces spéciales d'abord.
MONUSCO has deployed troops at Nyunzu several times, he adds, including special forces and a temporary operational base to help restore calm, and that has been achieved. The United Nations says most of the estimated 15,000 displaced people at Nyunzu have returned to their villages, although many of their homes have been destroyed and living conditions are extremely difficult. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
The United States government says it is still concerned about the disappearance of activist and the leader of the Occupy Africa Unity Square movement, Itai Zamara, citing apparent lack of progress by authorities in their investigations. Zamara disappeared 5 months ago. In a statement released Wednesday, the U.S. Embassy in Zimbabwe said it was joining the European Union in urging the Zimbabwean authorities to investigate the circumstances leading to Zamara's abduction and to safely return him to his family, as well as bring the perpetrators to justice. Occupy Africa Unity Square member Charles Nyoni said his organization is pleased with the U.S. Embassy's support.
We are not attention seekers, neither are we just noise makers, but we are people who are advocating for
our rights, that may be our rights be respected in this country, because this country is violating our rights. And any other international engagements, be it funding or whatsoever that is being discussed between other governments and this government, may they please be suspended until this country respects our rights.
In other words, do you still agree with the US and the EU that not enough is being done to investigate this case, or has there been some changes which you have observed?
As far as we know and as far as we are concerned, we agree 100% that nothing whatsoever has been done by the government, not even to show a single icon of remorse that they are at least concerned. They've just issued a press statement in the local paper, but nothing, not even any investigation has been done, save to threaten and keep on arresting us.
Presently, what are you doing about Mr. Zamara's case? Do you still keep your vigils? What exactly are you doing?
Yes, our vigil, we still keep it. We will not stop, neither will we be stopped by anything. We are still occupying Africa Unity Square, and we are still doing our flash peaceful demos. As long as they still breathe in us, we will continue doing that. We are also getting in touch and writing to embassies, seeking appointments and meetings that we explain our position and invite whatever form of assistance and encouragement that we can get from different embassies in this country.
That was Occupy Unity Square member Charles Nyoni speaking with Sita Dikile Nwala of Viewers Zimbabwe Service. South Africa's new visa regulations are deterring visitors, with some analysts estimating a loss of nearly $133 million this year in the tourism industry. As Gillian Parker reports from Johannesburg, South African President Jacob Zuma says the government will review the new requirements that have caused public clashes within the ruling party.
Regulations implemented last year that require South African visitors to provide biometric data in person when applying for tourist visas have been problematic in large countries like China, where only Beijing and Shanghai have South African consulates. Spending $165 billion globally in 2014, Chinese tourists are some of the world's biggest spenders. As one of the largest outbound tourism markets in the world, South Africa has invested heavily in marketing toward China. Grant Thornton Advisory Services Company Development Director Liam Back says the number of Chinese visitors to South Africa increased 15% in 2013. But when new visa requirements were implemented, demand dropped by more than 45%.
So what's happened is that the tour operators have turned around and said, you're making it too difficult for us to travel to your country. It has absolutely had an impact on our tourism industry. And the obstacles have just become too huge. And we say, okay, well, let's just go somewhere else.
Regulations introduced in June also stipulate minors must carry their full or unabridged birth certificate when crossing South Africa's borders. Biometrics and unabridged birth certificates are largely lacking in developing countries. Poor communication about the new requirements has caused confusion and uncertainty for prospective tourists. As a result, South African travel packages are being removed from various catalogues, says Tourism Business Council of South Africa CEO Majaji Ramawela.
You're trying to kill a mosquito with a sledgehammer. Where is the real problem? It's your porous land borders. And they're just putting this regulation because according to them, this is how it's going to solve the problem. It's not solving the problem. We're trying to do quick fixes and it's hurting. We're really, really, really hurting an industry that has been doing good.
The new birth certificate rules fueled a rare public dispute within the ruling African National Congress Party at a time when President Jacob Zuma is battling lethargic economic growth and a crippling energy crisis. Tourism Minister Derek Hanekom said last month the rules need to be changed, provoking a backlash from Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba, who argued that they were needed to curtail child trafficking. While human trafficking has to be tackled, many agree this tactic is not the most effective when traffickers usually adopt clandestine and illegal means to smuggle people in and out of the country. At a mid-year national address Tuesday, President Zuma said a ministerial committee would address the unintended consequences of the new immigration regulations on various sectors, including tourism and investment. Many say the government must act swiftly to mitigate the damage already done to the industry. Gillian Parker, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with handball. Egypt dismissed Venezuela 51-28 to clinch their first victory at the Men's Youth World Handball Championships in Yekaterinburg, Russia, on Wednesday, while Switzerland beat Algeria 30-21. Today, Thursday, Tunisia encounters Argentina. Turning to netball, hosts Australia outplayed South Africa 66-31 at the Netball World Cup in Sydney on Wednesday. The world champions New Zealand prevailed over Malawi 57-49. Today, Thursday, Uganda engages Jamaica. In swimming, South African Olympic 200-meter butterfly champion Chad Leclos aims to set two world records at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Leclos is quoted in the official Olympic online news bulletin Rio2016.com on Wednesday. Leclos declared his goal is to break American Michael Phelps' 100-meter and 200-meter butterfly world records, which stand at 49.82 seconds and 1 minute and 51.51 seconds, respectively. Moving on to football, a Confederation of African Football CAF inspection team is to visit Rwanda from the 23rd to 27th August to assess their preparation to stage the Orange Africa Nations Championships, CAF revealed in Cairo, Egypt. The draws for the competition takes place in the Rwanda capital, Kigali, on the 18th of November, while the three-week contest kicks off on the 16th of January next year. Meanwhile, Tunisia will host Libya in a friendly football match in Tunis today, Thursday. Finally, in rugby, defending champions Namibia hosts Zimbabwe in a Confederation of African Rugby Division 1A Africa Cup tie in Windhoek on Saturday. Whoever prevails in this match will win the Africa Cup for this year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, August 13th.
I wish to call on American police that killed a black teenager to stop the protesters by paying compensation to the late boy's family, because they have gone contrary to the slogan which says that police is our friend. I am Prince John Ushie in Beni Obaneku, Cross River State, Nigeria.
Well, thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Prime Minister of Libya's internationally recognized government said Tuesday he would resign if demanded by the people. While in Geneva, the UN Special Envoy to Libya urged the country's warring factions to agree on a national unity government by the end of the month. Prime Minister Abdallah Al-Thani faced sharp criticism in a televised interview, with questions from viewers blaming the government for a lack of services, and said he would step down Sunday if that was the solution the public wants. That's it for this Thursday, August 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Thursday.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.